From the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX, this is Reveal. I'm Al Letson. So today we're doing something a little bit different. We're here backstage at The Flight Deck, a theater in Oakland, California, where actors are warming up to perform North by Inferno. So let me back up just a little bit. North by Inferno is a play written by John Bernson based on our investigation into the deadly working conditions in the Bakken oil fields of North Dakota. We've been doing this for a couple years, working with playwrights to turn our real-life stories into stage productions.
Right now I'm just setting props and kind of making sure everything's set back here. Just making sure everything's set for our quick changes because I have like four in the show, so I have to jump in and out of Ray and Jesse.
That is actor John Terrell. He heard the original reporting we did on this story.
That really stuck with me, and that was kind of the deciding factor for me to do the piece.
He'll be playing Jebediah Jesse Stanfill, who was working nearby when a rig exploded in 2011. It's a dramatic story about lax oversight and the pressure to drill more oil faster in the Bakken. We'll be getting to that story later this hour as we revisit stories about the consequences of America's recent energy boom. Since our next story first aired in June, we've gotten some big news. President Obama rejected the Keystone Pipeline deal.
The State Department has decided that the Keystone XL pipeline would not serve the national interests of the United States. I agree with that decision.
And since then, Congress lifted a 40-year ban on crude oil exports. All of this means there's more oil that needs to get to market some other way, like by train. These days, there's 40 times more crude oil traveling through the country than just 8 years ago. But people normally don't know when those trains are rolling through their communities. And that has them worried, because much of the crude oil they're carrying is more volatile. Last year, 5 oil trains derailed and caught fire. Ashley Ahern of KUOW in Seattle and the public media collaborative EarthFix reports on a grassroots effort to keep track of those oil trains. And it isn't easy.
It's not every Tuesday night that you get to spend sitting in a car with a complete stranger counting trains. But that's what I'm doing with Dean Smith.
And I like to park right here when I'm watching trains because I can see the bridge up here and I can see the tracks down below.
Dean began noticing those mile-long oil trains coming through town, and it frightened him. Washington is one of the biggest oil refining states in the country, with 1.5 million barrels arriving here each week.
I was sitting here once and an oil train came through and I did walk up right next to it. And I mean, the sense of power of 100 of those huge cars, each carrying 30,000 gallons of crude oil, whizzing by me, I was scared.
Dean tells me he's worried that one of those trains could catch fire or explode in his community, just like what happened 2 years ago in rural Quebec. 47 people were killed, and most of a small town was burned to the ground. But when Dean tried to learn more about the trains, what routes they were taking, how many of them there were, what kind of oil they were carrying, local officials told him they didn't have that information. So Dean decided to find out himself. He organized 30 volunteers to take shifts, counting trains around the clock for a week straight. That's what we're doing tonight.
Passenger train, and it's northbound, and that's all I need.
All the volunteers upload their train sightings into a website Dean made. There are small placards on the train cars with numbers on them. It's a code for what the train's carrying.
So I hit send, and it sent my data to the database. So now it's recorded. That's what I'm here for, data.
Dean's retired now, but he was a college student back in the days of Sputnik and the Cold War. He double majored in math and physics, which led to an interesting career with the National Security Agency.
The work that I was doing there was all top secret. It involved going somewhere in the world and collecting some data and analyzing it about some Soviet activities. Enough said. So, I mean, this counting trains is pretty pedestrian. But you know, it's simple and it's profound in a way. If you can show relationships that can't be denied, then you can make some progress. I learned that at NSA.
I contacted the NSA to verify that Dean worked there. A spokesperson told me the NSA doesn't confirm what it calls agency affiliation. Dean and I listen to the rain on the roof of the car and wait for an oil train. No sign of one yet, but Dean is a patient and persistent man. When he started the train watch, Dean was able to gather more information about oil train traffic in 1 week than the railroads had given the state in the 3 years oil trains have been coming here. And that information is really important. Dave Byers is the head of oil spill response for the Washington State Department of Ecology.
It gives us an idea of what to prepare for, what the risk is, the routes that are taken.
And there have been some close calls already. One morning, I woke up and checked the news on my phone like I do every morning. And I saw that an oil train had derailed right here in Seattle at 1:50 a.m. I jumped on my motorcycle and raced down to the scene. Here's the story I filed for KUOW.
I'm standing on the Magnolia Bridge, looking down as men in yellow coats are trying to get a derailed oil train back on track here. It looks like there's at least one train car slightly off kilter on the track, and they're moving along the track with an orange or yellow tractor trying to put each one back on there.
Seattle was lucky that morning. The three train cars that derailed weren't punctured and no oil was spilled. But Dave Byers says that the company, BNSF Railway, didn't handle the situation properly. BNSF notified Dave Byers and his team almost an hour and a half after the derailment.
And the dispatcher from the rail company told our responder that there had been a derailment and there were no hazardous materials involved and there was no potential for hazardous materials to be involved.
Byers' team wasn't told there was volatile crude oil in that train until 5 hours after the derailment. And it was the oil refinery that told them, not BNSF Railway.
So we immediately sent responders down there to assess the situation. When we arrived, we didn't find a BNSF representative on scene.
But Byers' team did see workers welding on damaged oil cars. When asked, the workers said they didn't know what was in the cars. The area wasn't fenced off from the public. And North Dakota crude can catch fire and explode at temperatures as low as 74 degrees Fahrenheit.
We became concerned because people were wandering off the street and taking selfies of themselves next to the rail cars. And there was no preparing for the potential that one of those cars could actually start leaking.
There were people welding on cars full of oil that has a flash point of 74 degrees?
Yes.
Last year, state regulators recommended that BNSF Railway be fined up to $700,000 for failing to quickly report spills of hazardous materials. The company is appealing. I contacted BNSF Railway about the Seattle derailment. Spokeswoman Courtney Wallace emailed a response. She said BNSF had its hazardous materials team in place quickly to evaluate the situation and that, quote, this derailment did not cause a release at any point, nor was there a threat of a release. Communities along the railroad tracks are worried. Last year, several hundred people packed into the Anacortes City Hall to get information from oil companies and BNSF Railway. Anacortes is north of Seattle on the coast. There are two refineries here that receive oil by rail from North Dakota.
I want to thank you guys for coming today. This is obviously a very important issue to our community. And
just that morning, a BNSF oil train had derailed and caught fire in North Dakota. No one in the audience was allowed to talk. They could just submit written questions. The oil refineries talked about the safety precautions they have at their facilities to prevent a spill. They talked about their commitment to getting newer oil train cars. Courtney Wallace, the spokeswoman with BNSF Railway, was there. She talked about the company's commitment to safety. She said that BNSF believes that every accident is preventable. I walked over to her after the event.
Can I ask you a couple questions?
Yeah.
So can you tell me how much information is the railroad sharing right now with first responders?
We have always provided information to first responders, emergency managers, about historically what has moved through their towns. And so we're always cognizant of what information is shared because we don't want to see an incident happen that involves terrorism or anyone else who might have that kind of frame of mind.
BNSF Railway has said that information about oil train movements is proprietary, and sharing it could put the company at a competitive disadvantage. It took a federal emergency order to force BNSF to share oil train traffic information with states. Washington State is going one step further. The legislature just passed a new law that requires more detailed information about oil train traffic. It forces the refineries to share that information, since the state doesn't have the authority to get it from the railroads. They're regulated federally.
We're going to learn, I think, how much we don't know by having some of this information, and we may find that there's gaps and we need to do more.
Jessen Farrell is a state representative from Seattle and a Democrat. She was the lead author of the new legislation. I met up with her at a local park.
We're going to get the information. I don't really care who gives it to us as long as it's good information and it stands in court, because we need that information now.
Farrell's bill passed with bipartisan support after a long fight and heavy lobbying from the oil industry and the railroad. But Dean Smith, the train watcher near Seattle, says that no matter how hard the railroad fights the new law, it's pretty hard to hide an oil train. At this point in his shift, we've been waiting for 4 hours by the tracks north of Seattle. Still, no oil train. The streetlight reflects off Dean's glasses in the dark, and I can see the shadows gathered in the furrow of his brow. And then...
there's something coming.
Yeah.
The orange BNSF engine emerges from the tunnel, and then the black, pill-shaped oil cars, one after another. The minutes tick by, car after car after car. I watch Dean Smith, standing in the rain, shoulders hunched.
Sometimes I wonder, why fight it? Why not just move? That'd be the easy thing to do. But I think we have to fight. And I would like to see citizens' groups acting like this all over the country. That's a form of checks and balances that we can create. All it takes is a few people.
Ashley Ahern is a reporter for EarthFix, a public media collaboration that covers science, energy, and the environment in the Pacific Northwest. She's based at KUOW in Seattle. With the Keystone Pipeline off the table, many think even more new oil terminals will be built in Washington State, ones that increase the number of oil trains passing through. It could also lead to renewed drilling and another boom in the Bakken oil fields, where production has actually cooled off in recent years. And that makes the play we're settling in to see about conditions in the Bakken all the more relevant. More about that when we come back on Revealed.